Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
But God forgives us our weaknesses so long. So long as we would.
I haven't seen a sign of God lately. I mean, is he even listening?
Well, maybe his silence is essential to our free will.
I think that there has been a change in the basics of human nature. Something old, brutal, and hellish is here.
I don't think that you're crazy to think that.
You sense it. Nobody can do anything about it. It's like darkness that hangs in the air even when it's sunny and light. It's like God just locked up and left. Adios.
And so what if he did, Lois? What if he's gone? What if that's exactly what he's done?
Big Daddy's left and gone on a business trip, so we have the codes. We know the rules that goodness is governed by.
And maybe this is his way of telling us that it's time that we figure this shit out on our own.
He didn't just leave, Father. He left the keys to the candy store to the devil.
What are you looking for here?
Time. I need time to forgive myself. I need to escape. I'm going. Are you staying or are you coming too?
No. This was the best month of my life. We're all prisoners of ourselves. And from that, there is no possible escape.
A little double intro in this, quote, traditional audio podcast. First, from the flawed but interesting and Gnostic theme show, Grotesquerie. Indeed, like the Persian Zervan myth, where Ahriman is allowed to rule the universe for 1,000 years as a compromise with Ahura Mazda, it seems almost logical that demonic forces are managing this cosmos we're in. The other clip is from The Platform 2, where the protagonist realizes that changing scenery isn't an option in running away from the Archons, for Wetiko is inner as much as it is outer.
And its name was Yaldabaoth. You were talking about a snake with the head of a lion.
I've seen them again. I've seen them, just like Sophia. They are demons. That's what the kingdom is, and the cult will allow them in.
The lesson for both is the same. Don't matter who's in charge and in what material shithole we're in. The way out is in, and that inner transformation that alchemizes our ego, our very lives, is the way to stand against any empire that never ended. Break the bars of the Black Iron Prison. There is part of you that is a shard of eternity, older than time and space, older than the tyrannical creator gods, and superior than all their Karens and Catamites in the establishment. That's the part of you that you must access, and that's how you win this game of Saturn. Cross the labyrinth that is alive and always shifts, as Philip K. Dick wrote. That's why you have arrived at the virtual Alexandria.
Randall, as an old Zen koan, it goes like this. Everyone has two lives, and the second life begins the moment you realize that all along, you only had one.
Welcome to Aeon Byte. Welcome to learn about those contraband truths of ancient heretics the world almost forgot. We don't take prisoners, but liberate them. We are not the final authority on anything, but hope to be an endless possibility for everything. You are the final authority, have always been. We're running with those searching for the truth and avoiding those who have found it. We're avoiding the new boss and the old boss and the devil we may or might not know. We're writing our own gospel and living our own myth. My name is Miguel Connor, and I am eternally grateful you are here to finally find out who you are and what reality is not.
I know who I am. After all these years, there's a victory in that.
This quote from Stefan Heller from his book, The Gnostic Jung, crystallizes our plight. The Gnostics knew something, and it was this, that human life does not fulfill its promise within the structure and establishments of society. For all of these are, at best, but shadowy projections of another and more fundamental reality. No one comes to his true selfhood by being what society wants him to be, nor by doing what it wants him to do. Family, society, church, trade, and profession, political and patriotic allegiances, as well as moral and ethical rules and commandments, are, in reality, not in the least conducive to the true spiritual welfare of the human soul. On the contrary, they are more often than not the very shackles which keep us from our true spiritual destiny.
My dad said the two-party system works.
Well, Ernie, that's because your dad is a whore for the establishment.
Well, it's not really a measure of mental health to be well-adjusted in a society that's very sick.
Preach it, Bishop Heller, and get ready for an episode that keeps with the recent theme on Aeon Byte. How entheogens can assist us in journeying within to find that dragon treasure, or at least kick old Yaldibaldi in the cojones. Plus, this show is unique, as my guest takes a unique approach by finding unique revelations. That is Wade Richardson, who materializes at the virtual Alexandria to discuss his new book, The Psychedelic Mind Meld. Telepathically exploring shared consciousness. You heard it right from the title, so prepare to understand how psychedelics can actually get you connected to other beings clairvoyantly, even your past selves and other dimensions.
I fought the good fight. I finished the race. I kept the faith.
We need Wade's gnosis more than ever if we are to survive what will be a frenetic and violent 2025. Oh, you veterans of 1,000 psychic wars, you spiritual entrepreneurs, you shining crazy diamonds.
Sir, this is a Wendy's.
So deeper we go, regardless of what deity or our fragmented egos think. As Tolkien wrote in Mythopoeia, we are free captives undermining shadowy bars, digging the foreknown from experience and panning the vein of spirit out of sense.
Humans need fantasies to make life bearable.
No. Humans need fantasy to be human. You need to believe in things that aren't true. How else can they become?
To end, here is some step-by-step gnosis from our recent astral guest, Cody Peterson, on his exegesis of Jung's path to spiritual transformation. Hope you dig it and let me know. Number 1. Recognize the power of inner tension. Deep within us lies a natural tension between opposites, light and dark, strength and weakness, hope and fear. This inner polarity isn't a flaw, it's a source of energy. Transformation begins when we embrace this tension, understanding that it fuels personal growth and spiritual awakening.
No tree can ascend to the light of heaven if it doesn't descend to the depths of hell.
Number 2. Trust the process of the psyche. The journey of transformation is guided by a force greater than our conscious will. This process, called the transcendent function, works to harmonize opposing forces within us. It doesn't require force or control, only trust. From this process, meaningful symbols and insights emerge, leading us forward. Number 3, connect with the power of symbols. Symbols are the language of the soul. They are not just images or ideas. They're the foundation of how we perceive ourselves and the world. By reflecting on symbols in dreams, art, or mythology, we can uncover deeper truths about our inner life. These symbols give meaning to our struggles and reveal the path to healing and growth. Number 4, embrace change in perspective. As we grow, our understanding of symbols and life itself evolves. Each shift in perspective brings a deeper sense of purpose and clarity. Be open to these changes, for they are signs of progress. When we see ourselves and the world differently, we unlock new possibilities for transformation.
Your life is yours to create.
But the advantage to meeting others in the meantime is that one of them may present you to yourself.
Number 5, align with universal energy. Transformation isn't just about inner change, it's about reshaping the world around us. As we align with the deeper meaning of our journey, the energy of the cosmos responds. This alignment often leads to synchronicities or meaningful coincidences that guide us toward fulfilling our unique purpose. Stay attuned to these moments. They are the signposts of your path.
Always remember what the Hindu mystic said.
Mind moving fast is crazy. Mind slow is saint. Mind stopped is God.
Number 6, balance the opposites within. True growth comes from reconciling the extremes within us. Like a current flowing between positive and negative poles, energy is created when opposites are balanced. Instead of resisting challenges, embrace them as opportunities to find harmony. Every struggle has the potential to become a stepping stone to a stronger, more integrated self. Number 7, transform challenges into strength. Your most difficult experiences hold the greatest potential for growth. By integrating even the darkest parts of your past, you transform them into tools for building a brighter future. These experiences can become your greatest assets, not only for yourself, but also a source of inspiration and hope for others.
Don't you see? It's not about you. It's about them. No man can walk out on his own story.
Number 8, step into your purpose. As you harmonize the opposites within and engage with life symbols, you'll discover a renewed sense of purpose. This process connects all parts of your being, empowering you to live fully and authentically. You'll find that even the smallest steps forward open doors to a life aligned with your spiritual destiny. Number 9, trust the journey. The process of transformation is ongoing. With each step, you grow stronger, more aware, and more aligned with your true self. Trust in the unfolding of your path, knowing that every challenge brings you closer to wholeness and fulfillment.
Is this all real? Or is it just happening inside my head?
Of course it's happening inside your head, Harry. Why should that mean that it's not real?
You are capable of profound growth, O you of the broken places. Step forward, embrace the journey, and watch your life transform.
The mystery of life isn't a problem to solve, but a reality to experience. A process that cannot be understood by stopping it. We must move with the flow of the process. We must join it. We must flow with it.
Welcome to the Aeon Byte interview. With us today, we are honored to have Wade Richardson to discuss his new book, The Psychedelic Mind Mill, Telepathically Exploring Shared Consciousness. Wade, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Pleasure is all ours. And with us too, we've got the Moondog Vance. Vance, how are you doing?
I'm here after a crazy morning, but hopefully we can do a psychedelic mind meld and assuage my chaotic environment today.
There you go. It's all an illusion, as they say, and everything shall come to pass. Well, I really enjoyed your book, Wade, because again, as we were talking before the interview, we've done a lot of shows on psychedelics, including the individual who did the introduction to your book, Martin Ball. Great interview, and I love the work he has done in exploring psychedelics and entheogens, and valuable his contributions. But your book was great because it was really a fresh perspective on psychedelics while still honoring the ancient traditions, the mystic traditions that we both know work very well. So it's a great read. But you tell us, how did you come up with this book, The Psychedelic Mind Meld?
Yeah, well, it was kind of incidental. It was very unexpected, and I've been psychedelics for quite a few years before this kind of all of a sudden just hit me, and I can certainly give you some background on that. Sure. I'd been introduced to ayahuasca kind of serendipitously many years ago, and it was a colleague at work that had suggested that I might be interested because I had played around writing some fictional stuff on shamanism. And I ended up going to the ceremony, and it went from there. And it was several years later, I went down to Mexico with a friend of mine. And that was an interesting synchronicity because my friend had been struggling with alcoholism for many years and had an interest in ayahuasca in that context. And, you know, in terms of addressing the alcoholism, but didn't want to try ayahuasca in our hometown because he didn't want it to get out because of his background and profession. So he didn't like that vulnerability. And then, we were jointly going down to Mexico to enjoy some sports in this small town. And then this shaman phoned me up that I'd been working with, and she's like, "Oh yeah, we're setting up a ceremony down in Mexico. Are you interested?" And I'm like, "Well, you know, where is it?" And it just happened to be in the same town that we were going to. So that worked out perfectly. Yeah. We went to the ceremony, and it was, you know, we're basically there for 3 nights, and the first couple nights, not a lot happened for me, and I was kind of disappointed. And then my friend really was struggling. He was, struggled a lot with nausea and being sick, wasn't having any kind of more profound experiences or insights. And we got into the third night, and it was kind of one of those things where I was just questioning, why am I here? Nothing much is happening. And it really kind of hit me. Well, I'm here for my friend and supporting him. And so I just kind of dropped into a meditation of open-heartedness with no expectations that was going to go anywhere meaningful. Yeah. And all of a sudden I had this, you know, within a couple minutes, I had this massive energy kind of rise up through my body. My friend was sitting next to me, and you have to imagine the setting here where we're out in the jungle. It's a large ceremony. There's about 30 people there. There's a head shaman with a few other shaman there as helpers. And, I'm just sitting next to my friend. This energy rushes through me, and all of a sudden my arm just spontaneously grabs my friend's head. And, you have to imagine, I've been doing psychedelics now for a number of years, so I'm used to some real weirdness, and I just was like, okay, well, this is weird. But I was just able to observe it. And so my hand is placed on his head, and I feel this energy kind of coming through from him. And my body starts to shake a little bit. And the next thing I know, I'm just profoundly like caught up in crying and sadness and just kind of purging something, and but without any story. And this went on for probably 20 plus minutes. He didn't pull away, and I just kind of kept the circuit open, so to speak. Eventually there was this kind of dark earthy energy that started coming through that kind of freaked me out a little bit. And just the thought of that kind of turned off the connection. But yeah, the night kind of went on a bit from there. And there were a few other things that happened, but not anything important to our case here. So then the next morning, I asked my friend, you know, what happened for you? And he told me that he had a daughter that had died at a very young age. I think she was about 4.
Oh, dear.
And, you know, as a physician, he wasn't able to help her. And the family profoundly struggled with that loss. And yet he had never truly mourned the loss and the grief associated with that. And he said that, you know, this particular night, you know, well over 20 years later, was the first time he was able to kind of begin to let go of that. And it was just interesting how that basically, that energetically moved through me. And that was truly my first introduction to what was possible, kind of at a psychic and physical energetic level in terms of sharing something so intimately with another person.
Wonderful. And yeah, and thanks for sharing. And no, it makes sense because as you start your book with a sort of a shots fired or a big quote, where does consciousness begin and end? So that's always going to be the $64,000 question, right? And of course, on this show, and as science is showing us, consciousness is non-local, right? I mean, there's a good possibility it spreads out, and your book and your experience talks about this, right? How we can connect with each other because somehow we're part of the same source.
That's correct. We're very porous, and we can reach into each other in ways that are really hard to imagine.
Very true indeed. And yeah, for the audience, of course, as many know, I do ayahuasca with the Santo Daime Church in Portugal when I can get there. So if it's your thing, try the ayahuasca, the plant, the lady, as we call it, because it will bring up stuff that you need to work on. So tell us, Wade, to the also $64,000 question, what exactly is the psychedelic mind meld and what is its primary purpose?
Yeah, so that's a very big question and something that we could spend a lot of time working through. So I'll try to keep this short.
Sure.
Really, it is, you know, psychedelic telepathy. And when we reach into, well, what is telepathy? It is such a broad thing that I've come to understand. And, you know, typically telepathy is something where we have a lot of experimentation in terms of people, you know, trying to share images, whether it's, you know, playing card or a more sophisticated image, like an artistic image. And if that's being done in often controlled environments where people are trying to scientifically prove that telepathy is a thing. But the psychedelic mind meld takes it to a whole other level where we're likewise just saying, you know, we are very porous and we can truly share all of our psychic as well as physical energetic contents. And so just to give you a little bit of a sense, like at a psychic level, we can journey together, you know, into other realms. Just to give you a bit of a sense of that, my wife and I have done this quite a few times, and the first time we did it, and you know, she was someone with almost no psychedelic experience, but she just dropped all the way in. And let me just say quickly on that point that trust is a massive factor in terms of this level of engagement. You really have to trust the other person that you're working with. And, you know, being able to let go of the ego and drop in with the other person with a complete openness. And of course, my wife and I share that. So our first big experience was dropping in with the mushrooms. And, you know, the next thing we knew, we are together in a fractal version of Japan, in an ancient tea house, wearing kimonos, drinking tea together.
Wow.
And so, you know, it's like, again, you sharing this psychic experience or shared consciousness of journeying to other realms. And being very specific about the content, you know, like we are in a tea house together. It's not like we're drifting around in some kind of ether and, right. And it's really vague in terms of experience. So that's just a kind of a sense at the psychic level. And of course, at the energetic level, the story I just told about my friend in Mexico gives you an idea of how we can drop in energetically and we can feel into other people's emotions and potentially the energetic blockages that they hold in their body as it may relate to various traumas or difficulties that they've gone through in their life and not, you know, really released or fully processed.
Did you share visuals when you were in the tea house with your wife? Could you guys actually see the scenes and visually, or is mostly, you know, words and feelings and energy feelings?
No, that's a good question. And so it was all visual, you know, and when you're in that space, there's this telepathic sharing that is often beyond words. There is occasion where there is an exchange of words, but I've actually found over the years that that's quite a rare thing. Instead, it's this more deep intuitive knowing at an energetic level that's shared. And then it's kind of like that's the base of shared experience. And then the rational mind, so to speak, and the intellect translates that into words and into meaning. But in the tea house itself, it was like we were both embodied in the tea house, both looking around in the tea house, looking at each other in the tea house and drinking tea together in wow. the tea house. So it was that specific.
Was it like realistic or were there weird colors or did you guys look the same to each other as you do in quote unquote normal life? Or how did that look?
Yeah, that's an interesting question too. No, we didn't look like we do today. I mean, we looked Japanese, but there was an intuitive knowing that we were there together, you know, theoretically in a past life. But that's why I mentioned earlier, it was like a fractal version of Japan. It was not kind of, I guess, with the realism that we would expect in default reality. Instead, you know, there were the walls had this shimmering glow to them. And there was this, yeah, feeling that it was a bit more dreamlike.
I see. Cool.
Yeah, that is very cool, too. And yeah, I was just talking to a friend yesterday, and she was saying she was in a deep meditation. She was hitting all the right notes. And suddenly she had entered or was the body or was part of the consciousness of a kid riding the bike down the street, and she freaked out. So,
wow,
this happens again. And I mean, maybe it's past lives. Like you said, maybe it's a parallel dimension, but it's certainly a form of reality that should be explored. But you say too, Wade, that this is not for the uninitiated, right? You just can't grab psychedelics and expect this to work. You should have, like you said, trust with your partner to doing this exercise, but also have some knowledge of entheogens.
That's correct, Miguel. I mean, this is definitely, if you want to call it a modality for the experienced and the initiated, it's, yeah, for the advanced user. To be so engaged so closely with another person in terms of sharing so many, you know, psychic and energetic contents, it can be very strange, you know, absolutely strange compared to, you know, the default reality that we live in and overwhelming. And so in that context, it really helps to have some personal experience, you know, and often I would suggest probably quite a lot of experience working with different psychedelics, especially the particular psychedelic that you're going to be using in a given session with another person. just to have a sense of the territory and how strange it can get. And of course, just knowing oneself in the territory in terms of having a sense of one's shadow contents, how one can drop into, you know, both heavenly realms and very dark realms.
Right.
And that then, you know, with that understanding, an individual is not projecting their experience onto the other person, or at least if they are projecting, they have a sense that, oh, I'm projecting, you know, and
right.
Of course, all of this is difficult to navigate. And I talk about that in the book, and one way of dealing with that is, of course, having the non-dual perspective or attitude, where just kind of dropping into the experience and that everything that's going to arise is all me. And so there isn't kind of this othering that can occur where it's like, oh, you know, the other person is like dropping into this dark place and that's bad, right, and I want to get away from it, which is such a human, you know, egoic thing to do. And of course, we're doing that in lived life on a regular basis, as we can see around the world with all of the conflict.
No, indeed. And and the idea for a psychedelic mind meld, as you say, there's many benefits or features or where you go, right? Exploring different dimensions like shamans used to do, healing, understanding trauma. That's it, right? I mean, this is all altruistic stuff.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's definitely dropping into getting to know oneself in a much deeper way. And then, of course, with the porousness that we're discussing, dropping into humanity in a much deeper way in terms of understanding each other. And yeah, like you mentioned, I mean, we can drop into shared healing and a deeper understanding and connection.
And this is, as they say, really nothing new under the sun. As we've said on this show, we've done many shows on how consciousness is non-local and how telepathy is really just the natural state, not of just humans, but animals in general. That's just part of evolution. I mean, even individuals like really materialistic atheist individuals like Sigmund Freud or even Lewis Carroll, a whole group of people in the Enlightenment thought, you know, telepathy was just an instinctual part of human beings. And as your book says, isn't this something that so many other traditions have believed in and utilized for the benefit of the individual and the tribe?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's what makes this so exciting, is that there are all these other stories. And my book is just trying to highlight how we can work with this together in Western society in partnership with each other, which has not really been discussed meaningfully in the literature. But certainly, you know, there's been hints of it in the Western literature, an acknowledgement that it can happen using psychedelics. But when you drop into other modalities, you know, out of body experiencing and, you know, into shamanic work. And of course, looking at the yogis of Eastern traditions. Yeah, this is pretty normal, you know, and you certainly don't need psychedelics. Although I'll say that probably in most cases, there's a lot of training that would have to go into reaching these states. And just for example, you know, shared dreaming, you know, that's a thing without psychedelics, where, you know, the advanced yogi can enter the dreams, and this would be true also for a shaman, can enter the dreams of their devotees or students and help them along and teach them in terms of accessing these various states and, you know, moving towards even higher energetic states.
Well said. And of course, some people may be curious, but we have to bring in Star Trek, because you're talking about you and your wife in Japan. I was thinking Star Trek, The Next Generation, that room they went in. And of course, I'm sure Vance is thinking of the Vulcan mind meld, aren't you, Vance?
Oh, of course. Yeah. The holodeck and the Vulcan mind meld.
That's it.
Yeah.
Something that's already been speculated in science fiction, and we're just going full circle. The Ouroboros, as they say. And Wade, We're talking about entheogens. Do you suggest this can work with any type of psychedelic, or let the audience know because everybody has a different taste or experience?
Well, I certainly think it's likely. I have, you know, very limited exposure on my end. I mean, there's, you know, well over a couple hundred psychedelics out there, and I've only kind of worked with the more classic ones and certainly had success there. So I would expect that if you look at it from the perspective that psychedelics can help us relegate the ego and drop into deeper states or altered states of consciousness, holotropic states of consciousness. From that point of view, they all have, I would argue, probably have access to, reaching into the psychedelic mind.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
No.
And what advice, just for the audience, I would tell the audience, yeah, of course, get your book, but to set up a proper ritual with a partner or somebody who needs healing, what advice or things people should do and be very aware of and wary and conscientious?
Yeah, well, that's a very long list of things. I'll just try to hit some highlights. We've already talked about the importance of having psychedelic experience under one's belt. But certainly there's just some, you know, pretty straightforward kind of common sense safety things around set and setting. You know, like being a good place mentally, on the particular day, of course, being aware of contraindications for various other drugs and mixing those types of things. One, of course, has to be wary of like using any psychedelic at any time. You know, having a clean setting in terms of, you know, presumably a house and having, you know, a room set aside with a comfortable large bed or a large floor area. And also if, you know, things are going a bit sideways where each person can retreat into separate rooms, having, you know, a good selection of music that resonates for both people, you know, making sure that the doors are locked. So, you know, some random person isn't just kind of barging in.
Yeah.
And, you know, having emergency phone numbers, the people you can contact, making sure that they're aware of what's happening. They have an understanding of the complexity of working with psychedelics. So lots of basic things like that. Of course, there's different meditation techniques in terms of actually dropping into the session. I describe those in the book. And meditation is a really important thing. Just being able to sit completely still for an hour plus, if someone can't do that without psychedelics, they're probably, yeah, going to struggle. I mean, as soon as the body's moving, you're kind of dropping out of the hypnagogic state where the body's in kind of a trance or sleep state and the mind is awake and capable of dropping into these, you know, psychic spaces really lucidly. So those things are important. And I think the one really big one that I always want to talk about is just the, you know, the stuff with sexual energy. I found that in doing this work over the years, it's something that arises in almost all cases. It might be very fleeting. It might just last seconds. It might last minutes. But I found that it usually is something arises within the first half hour of dropping into the session, and it is usually fleeting, and it is something just to simply observe as energy, and, you know, where is that coming from? Observing that, and soon enough, it dissipates. And as you know, in the psychedelic world and, you know, the world more generally, issues of sexual abuse and sexual assault are, you know, it's a big deal, and it's a major concern. So people have to be very careful of that. And this comes back to the trust component. I've even included an appendix at the back that, you know, where people are agreeing to various things in terms of, you know, what are the physical boundaries and expectations going into the session. And certainly on this point, you know, from my perspective, you know, sex or sexual contact is just completely off the table. In some ways, it's not like, unlike taking alcohol, and then it's kind of like, you know, where do we get into this consent after you know, you're drunk or something, or, you know, so so those types of things have to be all very clearly set up ahead of time. And, you know, where there is agreement that there is no consent once you've dropped into the experience, because can you really be sure that that is meaningful consent once you're in?
No, it makes sense. And I like how you write about the four phases of the psychedelic journey arc and how they relate to the mind mill. And you talk about the ascent, which is relating to the ego, the peak, entering the mind meld, plateau, sustaining the connection, and descent, integrating the experience. Do you want to speak to any of this, or is this basically, well, shamanism at its best?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, this is the psychedelic arc, and it's you know, it's there whether you're doing solo work or joint work. So it's just something to be very aware of in terms of, you know, how you set up the session, being aware of how it's going to unfold. And of course, one thing to be really aware of, you know, if someone's struggling in a session, you know, highlighting that it's a time limited thing. And that's, you know, sometimes when you're so deep, it's easy to forget that and get lost in, wow, is this the way I'm going to be forever? Sometimes that would be great, right? Like when everything's going really well. Yeah. But if things are not going so well, wow, I don't want to be in this hell for the rest of eternity.
Oh man. Some of the best, ayahuasca sessions, or work as we call it in Santo Daime, were the bad trips, because I knew it was a pruning. I knew there were some great messages on the other side. I knew there would be some healing. So yeah, you'd agree, right? Even the bad trips are great. You're going down to fight that dragon who has the treasure, and it's going to give you the treasure.
Right. That's absolutely right. And but that there's a certain knowing in that you are dropping down into the difficulty to find and reach into that treasure, you know. And it's that funny thing in life, and I would say, you know, psychedelics really exemplify this, where you can drop into the negative and wow, you can flip the coin and the positive is on the other side. Right. And of course, vice versa.
Yes, indeed. And also, like about your book too, you there's one section you talk about the structure of the human psyche and how it has layers. And of course, you talk about the personal unconscious and the places where we have repressed memories and emotions. And I think that's so great, because for so many years, I swear, during the Enlightenment and the Industrial Revolution, people like told us that we didn't have an unconscious, and I think it's done a lot of damage. So you would agree that the unconscious still holds so much pain and trauma. Your friend, 20 years, and he just been holding on to that without even knowing. It's
Yeah, no, it's a big deal, you know. And I think that's one of the things in terms of our own human evolution. And, you know, if we look at the last 100+ years, that psychology really gave us this profound understanding of the unconscious in ways that, you know, even the ancient traditions didn't parse out all that well. And so, yeah, that gives us a lot more range in terms of understanding in ourselves. And of course, Carl Jung and others like him have really, you know, helped us and expanded our view of the collective unconscious, which is another thing that we can, of course, drop into. So it's one thing to drop into, you know, the pain or the held trauma in another person. It's a really big jump into the collective unconscious, where you can drop into the suffering of whole groups of people, you know. And yeah, of course, you know, that can show up as the, you know, the horrors that the Jews went through during the Holocaust. And if we want to flip that now, of course, what the Palestinians are going through in Gaza and elsewhere, and all sorts of those examples.
Yeah, and then you've got to deal with your, as I tell people, your ancestral trauma. Sometimes your ancestors need healing, and so you have to be involved into that. I mean, we really are all connected.
Very true, you know. And there was certainly an experience where I've dropped into the trauma of my grandmother. This was quite a few years ago, where the communists, she was living in Ukraine, and the communists came through and took everything from the family and shipped them off to Siberia. And my experience was so specific that I was on the train kind of as her, suffering, you know, the fear and the dread of everything that was going on when she was a young child.
Wow, that is powerful. Well, yeah, I'm glad you worked on that. And what do you think, Vince? Or are you in the holodeck having fun?
Oh no, I'm right here listening to what Wade's saying, and at least in this holodeck. And Wade, it's interesting with all these experiences of the mind melding with you know, other people, while you're both using the entheogens and also experiencing past lives and so forth, have you become like the mystics have, where you feel that there's really no individual consciousnesses that are separated, as Western thinking often teaches, and that really it's one big consciousness that's somehow paradoxically split into many?
Yeah, certainly. I think it's all of those things, you know. It's the infinite all connected together in unity consciousness, at the same time that we're all individual fingers on the hand of God, so to speak, you know, each with our own individual fingerprint, so to speak.
Okay, so would you say that these experiences have turned you into a capital M mystic, or do you fall short of that, or how's your orientation at the moment?
Well, I guess I would ask, how would you define capital M mystic?
Well, what I mean by capital M mystic is the small M mystics are usually the way we use the word, just into occult things and so forth, and they believe in certain things, for example, that New Age people believe or whatever. But what I mean by capital M mystic is specifically perennialism, one consciousness, and, you know, only one consciousness, let's say, almost like a monadism. It's more capital M, the way I use it, at least, is more specific. So how do you rate on that scale?
Well, I certainly reach into it, but I don't think I've landed. You know, I'm someone who continues in my own evolution and growth. And frankly, I'm not even sure there's any real landing, you know, after so many experiences. It just seems like consciousness is caught in this ongoing expansion that's infinite. And we're in for a really long and eternal ride.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was also curious as to whether or not, and this is kind of maybe a little bit of a tangent from the mind meld with an individual person. Have you... does this extend out to other entities that are non-human or no longer human or whatever? Have you contacted others that in the space of, you know, in the psychedelic space? Can we mind meld with those?
Yes, no, absolutely. I've connected with strange, you know, if you want to call them discarnate beings, entities, you know, praying mantis, which of course shows up often with ayahuasca, and, you know, certainly the dead. And actually, you know, I'll give you kind of a really cool recent story that's not in the book because this just happened. I've had this story with my dad. I touch on it a little bit, but I really struggled with my father. growing up. He was a fundamentalist Christian, and so was always really forcing his beliefs on me. Of course, with the best of intentions, you know, from the perspective of his concern for my eternal life. But yeah, he was a very emotional, abandoning person, and it was really difficult for me because, you know, I'd be preached at in one way in terms of this is how everything should be. But then, of course, I just saw lots of hypocrisy as everything was falling short, you know, not only with him, but of course, within the church itself. And then my dad got really sick a couple of years ago, and I knew that he was inevitably going to be dying. And I brought that up with him. I said, you know, it's not going to be too long and you're going to be dead. And I just want to check in, you know, this is kind of this was a very strange thing for me to bring up with my dad, of course, because I generally didn't talk to him at all about psychedelics. That was, you know, really cut off from him because of course of his views. But I said to him, you know, like I have this ability to sometimes connect with the dead, and would he be open to me connecting with you after you die? And I was expecting either not answering and changing the conversation, maybe a negative answer. But surprisingly, he was like open and wow. Said, yeah, no, that's something that would be interesting and I'd be open to. And I was just like, wow, what's happening?
Yeah, really?
Anyway, it was quite something. And I think that, you know, him facing death really started to change some of his fundamentalist views because he saw that, you know, Christ was not returning in his lifetime and that so many of the prophecies were not going to come true in his lifetime. So anyway, there was a shift. Yeah, so then he dies. And that was over a year and a half later. And so then I went, you know, looking for him a couple of weeks after he passed with no success. And a couple more weeks went by. I connected to a psychopomp in Texas based on a friend of mine's recommendation. She connected to him and said, yeah, you know, like he's, you know, completely open and transforming and full of love. And I was like, okay, well, I don't resonate with that, but sure. And so she told me things that, you know, were unique to him that I never mentioned anything about him. So it was like, you know, there was a genuine connection there. And she said, well, I had tried to reach out to him too early, you know, give it a bit more time. So I gave it a few more weeks, tried again. And yeah, I did manage to connect, you know, he showed up. And it was fascinating because he apologized for all of these struggles and, you know, his challenges around parenting throughout my life. And at an energetic level that just kind of blew me away, you know, like there's this deep sadness around there, but also reconciliation. And that also triggered within me, you know, an apology to him because, of course, as an adult, I could be a bit of an ass. And yeah, it was just this complete reconciliation and forgiveness that went both ways. And it was a true resolution of this kind of lifelong trauma in a very short time. It just blew me away. And then, you know, another, I guess, about year goes by. And my wife and I are doing a deep mushroom session. And, you know, there's lots going on. We're dropping into the mind meld, you know, shared consciousness together. And then all of a sudden, and this is just a couple months ago, my dad shows up for both of us, you know, and my wife had no real meaningful relationship with him. You know, she met him a few times. We, you know, live in different cities and stuff. And right away for both of us, he's like, he's in the room. And, you know, there was this transformation and this, you know, love and light that this psychopomp had talked about was palpable. You know, it was very real for us. It felt like an angel had entered the room, and it was nothing but just pure bliss and love and sharing and openness. And both my wife were just sucking it up. And it was just like, wow, this is just so special. Who would have ever imagined, you know? So that gives you a sense of what you can reach into.
Amazing. What I want to know is, did he meet Jesus?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting from the out-of-body literature. I would think that's very likely.
You didn't ask him though.
No, there wasn't so much of a conversation.
He probably found out he was Jesus all along.
That's the interesting thing, right? I mean, at kind of an archetypal level, we do all have that Christ energy within us.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's part of the message of your book, and you and Vince were talking earlier. There's, of course, there's always the danger of solipsism or spiritual bypassing where, oh, I'm so enlightened, I'm just going to walk away. But I think the theme of your book is that idea that to be healed, we must heal others, the redeemer that they talk about, right? We have to be bodhisattvas. And as I say, I don't even know if it's true or not, but it works, you know. None of us get out until all of us get out, right? We all got to heal, and that's our true purpose as a human, like with you and your friend and you and your father, is to heal others once you are healed, or it heals you to heal others.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that healing path is just ongoing. Like, I certainly am not fully healed. It's a process. And that's what's so interesting about the psychedelic mind meld, is that it's, you know, it's a co-creative experience. You know, it's not like, you know, there's a shaman or a lead person that takes on this higher role where one is doing something to the other and that it's just a unidirectional thing. It really is a co-creative engagement where you drop in and each person can take the lead on what's going on. And ultimately, you can't tell in advance what's going to happen in regards to that. I've certainly found that, I've been doing this work for so long that it's often me in the lead, but I've definitely had a number of occasions where it's flipped and the other person spontaneously starts working on me, and it's just awesome.
Yeah, that's amazing for sure. And what other visions have you had that are interesting? I think, did you have a vision of Gandhi? Was that a dream I had last night? I had a really long night of extreme dreams after I read your book.
Well, I don't know what,
surprise.
There's been this connection to, you know, these various big characters, you know, Gandhi, John Lennon, King David, and various others. And, you know, it's one of those interesting questions. You know, what exactly is happening in those cases? Am I truly connecting to the individual soul of these people? At an energetic level, is something more archetypal going on? Is it possible that they're another discarnate being, but because I'm familiar with who these people are, my own subconscious, if you will, or biography, is, you know, creating an image on top of what this discarnate being could be. So there's so many different possibilities. And as you know from reading the book, that's one thing I really highlight, is that there's just so much mystery out there, you know, and I think it's really important to avoid getting caught up in, like, you know, this is what it is, and it's just this one thing. You know, and instead being really fluid, like life is a dream, you know, as we see so often being taught in the Eastern traditions.
Yeah, you got to embrace the ambiguity because, you know, we are limited by these little monkey brains we have. We can't see the whole picture, and expressing the whole picture is just as hard. And well, what advice do you have about picking the right partner? I mean, obviously you have your wife, you guys jive, everything's good, but for somebody who might be single, what do you look for? Or
yeah, well, again, it comes down to
trust, right?
This big piece of trust. Yeah. And, you know, seeing the other person of being grounded and, you know, we all have egos, of course, but, you know, being on the lookout for someone who drops into, you know, narcissism. And they might not be someone who is diagnosed fully narcissistic, but, you know, there are people who have really big egos and you know, can start running the show and run roughshod over you. And so, you know, those things are important to look out for. You know, where are they at in terms of just more general mental health and also physical health? And just seeing that they're, you know, kind of a participant in society and that they, you know, to some extent have their stuff together. And of course, we all have layers of trauma. That's just part of being human. So there's no perfect in this. But yeah, you know, using one's intuition and working through, like, who do you feel safe with?
Exactly. And how do you see the whole psychedelic movement going versus what it was 20, 30, 40 years ago? I mean, I guess I would say there's peaks and valleys, right? I mean, sometimes it gets out of hand. The hippie movement started well, but then it kind of went down with all the deaths and Charles Manson, you know, the shadow side, and it messed us eyes. And then, you know, things are go up and down. But how do you see it today in the year 2024?
Yeah, well, it's an exciting time, you know. Certainly, we're looking towards, you know, likely some form of legalization. I mean, Oregon is obviously taking the lead on that, and I think that's great. But I also don't want to see legalization like alcohol. You know, we have this neurotoxin and carcinogen that's just available everywhere, you know. And
of course,
that's pretty scary. And we see all sorts of negative consequences with that. You know, the World Health Organization has identified that alcohol is the most, is the worst drug on the planet just simply by volume and the horrors that it creates.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we want to be very careful about psychedelics. You know, you don't want to be just popping into the corner store and picking up your local psychedelics, even though one could argue, you know, from a black market perspective, it's pretty much that easy anyway. But, you know, I think it's a society, trying to grow into a mature use or safe use of these very powerful compounds. And, you know, so myself and many others like me are trying to create a culture of wise use around these substances, because as you pointed out, it can easily go sideways. And I think in the years ahead, we're going to see a whole mix of things, you know, some great things. And we'll see people dying from use of psychedelics, you know, car crashes, accidental deaths, more sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a mixed bag, just like, you know, other drugs, frankly.
Yeah, I think it was either Timothy Leary or Aldous Huxley who said, an idiot on acid is just an idiot on acid. It's not going to, you know, you have to have the right attitude, mind, even as a collective society. It's like, you know, if we're not healed together or if the society is sick, no amount of legalization is going to solve that, right, Wade?
That's right. That's
problems go deeper.
And I've seen that with people, you know, like... a close friend of mine, you know, he was profoundly struggling with a relationship, dropped in, and this isn't a relationship that ended really poorly, and he dropped into suicidal ideation, and I was very concerned about him, and I introduced him to 5-MeO-DMT.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in many ways it saved his life, but he kind of dropped into the five hole and was using it a lot, and I just watched as, you know, he would have these big epiphanies every time he did it. And he was doing it daily for quite some time. And so, you know, he would take breaks, of course, you know, a few months at a time. But, you know, I watched over 2 years, and it was like 2 years later, and I'm like, man, those are the same epiphanies as a couple of years ago. Are you going to do the work and change those habits? Because I'm just hearing the same thing over and over again. And then it actually got even a bit worse, you know, with COVID, he dropped into some really conservative right-wing views and dropped into a lot of, you know, really out there conspiracy theories. And I was like, wow, you've just kind of gone off the rails here. And this would be an example of how psychedelics can take you down a difficult path in themselves, because it's kind of one of those things where it seemed almost like an ego rebound, where he dropped into, you know, unity consciousness and this bigger view. And yet in lived life, it was like his ego was responding and going in the opposite direction. Like he had pulled really hard on the elastic band towards, you know, divinity. And then it was like it slingshot backwards in the other direction in lived life.
Yeah, exactly. And I know it's hard. Yeah, 2020 has been hard, especially addiction rates. Alcoholism has gone up, mental disease. So we are at a hard time. And I hope people can understand that there is healing with psychedelics, but that's just the beginning of the work. The work is deep trauma, right. Deep collective trauma. And if we, that's the attitude, we can save us. You can save you, but just going, you have to go deep into the inner journey, right? Wade, deep.
Yeah, this is a lot of work, you know, like you mentioned earlier, that's so much about healing and the healing journey is, you know, being proactive about one's healing and really going deep in terms of the inner journey. And psychedelics are only one part of that. They're not a silver bullet.
No, exactly. And of course, as I say, helping others, the idea that I use on the Elvis book that you and I talked about is the wounded healer. The person like Elvis wanted to help others because he was so hurt. And it was almost like by helping others with his music and his good deeds, it's almost like my pain is what gets me to help others.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as we get to the end, Vance, you have any last questions for Wade?
Yeah, here's a biggie. Do you think that the expanded realms that are available with psychedelics could possibly help us get to the bottom of the truth that's going on in this world? I mean, you know, if you like, for example, your friend that suddenly was tapping into conspiracy theories as a whip back or whatever. Do you think that it's possible that you could actually, get into the psychic realms and kind of find out what's going on, really going on in the Pentagon or with UFOs or whatever? Is there truth that's available, or is it mostly internal truth?
No, I think there is truth there, you know, but it's so challenging to figure out what is really truth. And I talk about this because it's, you know, there's this fantasy and delusion, which of course occurs in regular life. And you can imagine if psychedelics are psychological amplifiers, we can pull that right into the psychedelic realms. And, you know, I've reached into what I would see as primordial truth. And at the same time, I've dropped into delusion, you know, and that delusion can show up like, you know, I was in a really nasty accident years ago. And I'm in a psychedelic session and I'm, you know, clearly going through layers of healing, but, you know, the fantasy or delusion becomes that, oh yeah, I'm healed, you know, and I wake up the next day and it's like, no, I'm not.
Projecting into the future.
I guess another point too, Vance, just to your question is, it's kind of funny because years ago, and I, you know, this was pretty way out there, but I was sending some emails to some top, you know, scientists with the idea of connecting where, you know, I could help them drop into these other realms using psychedelics and we could journey together and look for profound answers to very, you know, difficult unanswered scientific questions. Because I believe that's possible. But the funny thing is I got no response, which of course is probably not that surprising.
Yeah. Well, maybe they weren't into it, but I think John Lilly was active in this area when he was alive, you know, the dolphin guy.
Mm.
And which leads me to the question, have you had any experiences with connecting to pets while in the under the influence?
Yeah, well, we have a cat and... it's funny, you know, like I've kind of reached into him and there's definitely a sharing, but it's not as deep, not anywhere close to as deep what I've experienced as humans. And he, you know, he can drop in and all of a sudden he's much more friendly than normal because he's a bit of a badass. And he starts purring and he can pet him in ways that he normally wouldn't want to be touched. But at a certain point it's too much and he just also can just take off.
Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Well, awesome. Well, I have this on the show notes, Wade. Anywhere else you want to send the audience?
Yeah, the place for people to go is Facebook. So I'm on Facebook, and I've actually set up a group there called Psychedelic Telepathy. Mm. So that's the place to connect.
Oh, I'll definitely join.
Mm-hmm, great.
For sure. Yeah, because this is great work. And for the audience, great book. If you want something new, but again, that honors that ancient gnosis of understanding the cosmos and healing, yeah, definitely check out Wade's book. But we are at the end of this session. Vance, thanks for keeping us company in the holodeck.
Oh, it's been a great trip. Quote unquote.
Yes, it has been indeed. Yeah, Wade, we really appreciate you coming on the show. We appreciate you writing the Psychedelic Mind Mail, and good luck with all your future work and healing.
Well, thank you. It's great to talk with both of you guys. I really appreciate the opportunity, and look forward to your book, Miguel, on Elvis, the cosmic Elvis.
Oh, he had some, you wait till you see about his mystic experiences and astral travel. He was a very busy person too, you're going to see.
Well, I have to say, if it's possible that we can bifurcate as you know, human beings and souls off into different directions, I have met a few Elvises who claim to be the real Elvis.
Really? So, yeah, awesome.
Yeah, it's been pretty funny. Yeah.
Wow. What do they have to say?
Well, they've been to producing music and various things, and of course they are the one, you know, not unlike the various Jesus Christ that show up across the planet. Right. And funny enough, I've met quite a few of them.
That is so cool.
But so they're doing their thing.
Yeah. No, he's been very busy since he died. The apparitions, I have a whole section on the apparitions. He has appeared with people who've had near-death experiences on the other side, and he talks to them and sends them back. So, Elvis, Jesus, Bigfoot, and the UFOs have a lot of work in this modern times because they transcend definition, and they are part of our collective unconscious. Even now, if you go to the Graceland website, Wade, there is a whole page where people can put in their Elvis apparitions.
That's great. Yeah, I'll keep a lookout for him myself.
Yeah, if he has any message for me, please send it along. And I'm serious. I'm not even being facetious.
And I'm serious too.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Wade. And we'll talk soon.
Great. Take care, gentlemen.
Likewise.
Take care.
Bye now. Bye.
And there you have it. Wade bringing us mind-expanding, reality-dispanding revelations. Love is stuffy stuff. This is the whole chat, as during the recording, the holidays and Elvis deadlines and audiobook projects were squeezing the Kronos out of me. For all subs, though, I'll provide that podcast summary I've been using lately from Notebook LM. A few think it's too uncanny valley as I feed the AI info and it provides this AI podcast. But most enjoy the information and how it puts extra content to the topic. So if you're not a sub, please support for this bonus and others that often include full shows, early shows, extra commentary, and much more. One-time donations on PayPal, Stripe, YouTube, or even crypto really helps keep the lights of the Pleroma on. I can't do it without you. Let us to the bonus section if you're a sub. For everyone else, keep fighting the good fight, keeping the faith, and finishing the race.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.